You're listening to Trek FM.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Welcome everyone to Trek FM's local watering hole. I am the host, Matthew Rushing. I'm so excited to be back with you guys this week. I want to thank you guys so much for listening. It means a lot. So thank you so much for taking out your time during the day, evening, whenever you've popped this podcast into some sort of pod catcher or iTunes catcher or whatever it is you're listening. And maybe you're listening in the future and I don't even know what you're listening on, but thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. Of course, you know we are all over the place on iTunes. You can find the show on iTunes at itunes.com/TrekFM because we are proudly part of the Trek FM network. You can also find the show on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. We're on the Babel Conference, which is our listeners-only discussion group where we can talk about all the shows here we do on Trek FM. You can find that. Just go to the Facebook page, type in Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and you'll find the group. Ask to be let in. You can be let in. Talk to all the other fans that love the shows. Leave us a voicemail. Go to speakpipe.com/TrekFM. I'd love to hear what you have to say about the movie we're going to talk about tonight. And, of course, you can also email us. Go to trek.fm/contact. Would love to hear from you guys. Really appreciate hearing from y'all what you have to say. And so just wanted to thank a few people. Just a quick shout out to some people that I realized that have given us some iTunes reviews that we haven't thanked yet. And got The Riley Guy. Really appreciate The Riley Guy giving us 5-star review. That's fantastic. And Omega Sam 87, also 5-star review. Thank you so much. And in fact, we're going to be doing a little review contest here. So within the next month, all the way till July 19th, you have to get us a review in there on iTunes. Give us a star rating and a review because that's the only way we'll know if you've given us one. And you could win the new digital copy of Batman v Superman, the Ultimate Edition. That's right. So get that review in, and I'd love for you to be the winner of our prize. Well, I have two fantastic gentlemen who are back from the moon base. They made it back. I'm so glad they're here because we're going to be talking about Independence Day Resurrection. Richard, you made it back. I'm so excited.
Woo! Thank God.
It looked dicey there for a minute. Let's just be honest.
Couple close calls, but, you know, I made it through.
You know, those piloting skills, they are well within order. People don't mess with this guy. So, and Mike Schindler, how you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
Doing well, sir. Doing well. I had a question that I wanted to know from you guys. Summer movies, big deal. We all get excited when they're coming out for the most part. And so I wanted to know where you were before you got to Resurgence. You know, we talked about Independence Day last week, how much we loved the movie. And so I kind of wanted to see where you guys were before going into this one. What was your mindset? Mike, I know that from a few places, you were pretty excited. What was it that had you so pumped for Resurgence?
I think a big factor in it was nostalgia. You know, the fact that I really, really loved the first movie, but I also really, really loved the experience of going to see the first movie, you know, in that summer. Like I said last week, that movie kind of defined the movie summer of 1996, which was a really, really significant one for me because it was the first time that I was like hardcore into, you know, movie summer. So, you know, to take it back, you know, 20 years later, you know, on the dot and everything, I was super excited about that. You know, I think what I said last year was, you know, Independence Day Resurgence is my Jurassic World, you know, and a lot of people who sort of like saw Jurassic Park as, you know, this childhood thing that really sort of made an impact on them and went to see Jurassic World, I think largely because of that, you know, that's how I kind of approached Independence Day Resurgence, you know, with that sense of nostalgia, you know, and I made a big deal this one of seeing it in on the exact same screen that I saw the first one on and everything. And I was just sort of like loving reliving that moment in time, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely understand. And that analogy of Jurassic Park and Jurassic World makes a lot of sense to me because I was one of those kids. You know, I grew up with Jurassic Park being kind of this watershed moment for films. Obviously, I'm a kid of the 80s, so growing up on Star Wars, but I never saw that on the big screen. And then Jurassic Park coming out is just really that big momentous occasion where there was something, you know, I was at that age where it was like where your parents kind of let you see that scarier movie, you know, that you wouldn't have gotten to see before, you know, so it's just, it's a real big moment in your life. And yeah, for me, that was Jurassic Park. So I can completely understand where your headspace was at for, you know, Independence Day resurgence and why you'd be so excited. What about you, Richard? Where was your headspace at?
You know, before we saw the movie, we actually watched, we watched ID4 and, you know, we're all pumped and we were ready to go. And, you know, it's just like Mike, it was more nostalgia on what the first one was like. And I was expecting it was going to be something, you know, on the same grand scale as ID4 as well. And, I mean, I don't have a movie comparison like that from 96 because honestly, I don't remember most of 96. But it's just, yeah, I went in there with my girlfriend. I'm sorry, my fiance and my daughter, and expecting to be to get our, you know, minds blown.
Yeah, it's funny to me because, you know, there are lots of movies that I have a nostalgia for. And Mike, I think we've talked about that a lot, you know, this idea of nostalgia. And it's really something that's huge in Hollywood right now because they keep, like, bringing things back. You know, we talked about it when we talked about X-Files. You know, obviously they did it with Jurassic Park and bringing us a new one. I think The Force Awakens is the biggest nostalgia button film that maybe has ever been made. You know, it's like J.J. Abrams just had not an easy button, but a nostalgia button, and he pressed it, and that's what popped out. I think it's a really big thing, and I love nostalgia, but for me personally, when I saw that they were doing this, I was like, oh, seriously? That's not a movie that we should touch. You know, we should just let that be its thing, which it was great when it was its thing. But you can't add to this. You're not going to make it better. You know, you're not going to make another one like this. And so my big worry going into the film was, this is just not going to be very good. And it's going to make me think about the original Independence Day differently. Or just wish that it hadn't been made. So that was my fear going in, just because of, I mean, I love nostalgia, but I'm also cynical enough, I guess, to realize that, you know, you have to be really careful with what you add to and why you add to things, because, you know, you can hurt the original.
I'm not necessarily sure that I agree with that, but regardless, I think that this is a case where that doesn't apply. I think you could make that argument if this movie had come out, you know, like 3 years after the first one, right? But 20 years down the line, that's something which is going to be different in some way. And I think it is something which was different in this way. I mean, if you look at this movie on paper and you hear the pitch and it's like, okay, it's 20 years later, we have advanced technology to a point where, you know, we're protecting the Earth from these aliens with their technology, it's essentially making an alternate reality. I mean, if you just say that, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm hooked. I'm in. That's a different movie. You know, that's a way different movie than what you would get if this movie were made in 1999. And it's way different from what most sequels would be because it has that weird alternate reality element to it. So to me, there is definitely something which can be added to the mythology and everything by doing a sequel now. And I don't think that Independence Day is so sacred that, you know, trying a sequel, even though it may or may not work, is, you know, like, forbidden. I actually don't think that any movie is like that, to be honest.
Well, you know, I'm not saying that the movie is sacred, because Independence Day is, I mean, as we talked about last week, I love Independence Day. It's such a fun, great film. And it still is, I think. I think what I was saying, though, is just more, I guess, let's just talk about it now. Why do you add a sequel to a movie, you know? Why make a sequel to a movie? It's because you feel like you have a good story to tell with, I guess, the characters. And you feel like you can continue the story. And, well, it's, just be honest, it's a business, so you want to make money. I mean, that's really the reason to make a sequel. It's Spaceballs all over again. The search for more money. So, I mean, that's why we make a sequel. And, but the thing is, to me, I guess, as a creative, and I've seen this, you know, with TV shows too, it's when you start to stretch things out so far that really you hurt the franchise, you know, like, you drag a season of TV, you know, show of TV out 12, 13, 14, however many seasons, you're really diluting the water and hurting the storyline, because usually you're just kind of regurgitating at that point. So you're right, Mike, 20 years later, but I think almost to me that makes my point of why go back and make a sequel to a movie that's 20 years old that, yeah, people loved then, but are you going to do it? But I don't know. What do you think, Richard?
Well, you know, and honestly, I think the 20 years did help. It definitely made the story feel more real. I mean, 20 years, we've advanced in technology and basically replicated the aliens technology and whatnot. I mean, it's realistic to it's more believable than, like Mike was saying, like if it was 3 years later and here they come, they're coming back or with a bigger ship or whatnot. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. I believed it more. I mean, I mean, it honestly, when the news came out, when they were going to bring out the resurgence, I was like, why? I mean, is there a need to add on to the story? And the only thing I could really think of, I mean, granted, I mean, I love the idea. It was great. I was on board already with the movie. But then really thinking about it, it's like, why would you want to bring on another film? The only thing I could think of is money. I mean, and I don't know if you want to talk about the ending or not right now, but, you know, it sounds like it's going to be another movie after this. I mean, that's the feel I got from it. And it's just, I wasn't exactly blown away by this movie. I mean, I liked it, but it just, another movie after this does not seem right. I mean, it's like Transformers all over again for me. It's like, why make another one? Why make another one?
I think you thank you. You brought up a film, which I know a lot of people disparage the Transformers franchise, and I love the original Transformers because I felt like it was Independence Day in a lot of ways. It knew exactly what it was. It was kind of a big, dumb action film that just happened to be a lot of fun. It had the nostalgia factor of, you know, the kids that grew up with Transformers, you know, and so getting to see that on the big screen. But it doesn't need a sequel. It doesn't need a mythology. It could be just one thing. And that's kind of, for me, I guess, coming into that, Mike, when you were talking about this idea of like adding to the mythology, it's like, well, to me, Independence Day is a one and done. You know, like it doesn't need a myth. Not every story needs a mythology, you know, because will it really be that deep? So I guess the question then is, let's look at the story here. What do we get in this movie? Is the story holding up? And so we've got 20 years later. As you guys said, Earth is, you know, very prosperous. We've cleaned up the mess the aliens left for the most part. And we've adapted their technology, and the world has united and become a happier place, except for the people who've been kind of left in ruins, like, you know, Bill Pullman's Thomas Whitmore, who still has almost like seizures because of the connection he has with the aliens. And some people haven't fared as well. Or like the ship, there's a ship that landed in Africa, and those people fought a ground war with the aliens for years upon years. So it's an interesting set. I have to say, the beginning of the movie, interesting setup. Really nice work as they kind of dive into what the world is like 20 years later.
Yeah, and I definitely love that that idea. I mean, of them panning into the Earth Digger or whatever it's called, the molten, when the one that was getting our molten rock in the earth. But you know, it's like, I really wish they would add more to that, because it, as soon as they started talking about a ground war, it was like, oh wow, what else is there? I mean, are we going to see something, or you know, are we going to? I mean, it, and we didn't even see an alien. It just, you know, when they went in that ship, I was in my mind, I was thinking, this is going to be aliens. Here we go. We're going to rock some, you know, heads, and nope, nothing.
Yeah.
I was kind of disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, that's the type of stuff that I really, you know, sort of liked. And I mean, that's the type of thing that, you know, like we were saying, you couldn't do if this movie were made in, say, 1999, you know? And I don't know, there's a thing which it's been happening lately, and I think it's kind of awesome. It's very rare that this has happened in the past, and now it's happening again and again and again, and I kind of love it, where they say, okay, this franchise has died, but now if we wait 25 years and go back to it, there's something new to explore, you know? And it's not like it's planned out or anything, but it actually opens up some interesting doors which didn't exist. It was, were never intended, you know, but it really does sort of like get you to look at that thing in a different light. You know, I mean, I think that the big joke that everyone was saying, you know, back in 1996 when they were saying, like, of course there's going to be a sequel, is like, oh, they come back again and then we defeat them again. And oh, you know, what I mean, like, what is that story? Like, literally, it's just the same thing again. But now this is an opportunity to do something really different. And, you know, I think that that's an exciting possibility.
No, I agree with you, and I think the movie starts out with some really exciting possibilities.
Yeah. I like the ground war thing, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something which I never considered, and I'm like, that's awesome. And you can say, you know, here, like, this thing lasted 10 years, and you're like, oh my God, you know, that's amazing. That is such a great concept, and I can forgive not seeing it, but at the same time, I thought, like, okay, now I want to see that movie. You know, I want to see if we're going to start doing, you know, Independence Day expanded universe. Let's get a prequel with a ground battle here. And that could be a really cool movie, you know?
I think, well, I want to say this too. So Independence Day, the original film, is pretty long. It's like 2.5 hours. This movie is only 2 hours. So it feels very truncated. Like it feels like we're just trying to get to the wham bam, you know, action. Just
yeah, for sure.
And
we're
longer. Not spending time with the story characters the way we did in the first movie. Because if you, like we talked about the last movie, it's not just wall to wall action. There's a lot of character setup, a lot of character buildup, and a lot of like world building things that happen to kind of get you interested in the characters. I would say the story here, it doesn't really do a good job of making you care about, you know, anyone here, because the storyline is moving so fast and kind of glossing over all this stuff, so that we're just here to get to people blowing up aliens.
Yeah, I don't really know if making it longer would have made it better. I mean, I see what you're saying, that it needed more character development and everything, and I totally agree with that. But I think the characters that they wrote were extraordinarily boring people, and to spend more time with them, I think, would have been intolerable. So, I mean, I honestly don't think that this movie needs to be any longer. In fact, I think that this movie could be a good 20 minutes shorter, and you can lose it off the back end.
Well, what if they stepped up the characters and everything?
I mean, that's quite possible. I mean, they talk about, I mean, Godfather, you know, we were talking about 3-hour movies off mic, and, you know, Godfather is the classic example where the studio is like, this feels long. Cut it down. They cut it down to 2 hours or whatever it is. And then they were like, wait a minute, let's try putting stuff back in. And when they put stuff back in, people cared about what was going on, and it felt a lot shorter than it actually did, even though it was much longer. I mean, certainly that's possible, that could have happened. That being said, given what we saw, I don't think that that happened. I don't feel like there's any sort of like missing character beats here. I feel like there's missing characters, you know? And I don't mean like we need more characters. I mean like the characters that we have need to actually be like people, like real people.
Right. No, exactly. I completely agree with you, Mike. And that's where, yes, if what I'm saying kind of falls short because you don't really want to see more of what we've got. You know, you're kind of like, can this just be over instead of like, can we get more of this? And I think part of it, too, is like the other issue with waiting 25 years for a movie like this is that we have seen a lot of movies like this in the last 25 years, 20 years.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, even just the setup, I mean, now, so the ship that they go to in Africa that Jeff Goldblum's character David and this woman we had never met before but apparently is a love interest of his, you know, who's a psychologist who's been studying people with alien effects that they've had with the contact they've had with aliens for 20 years. Yeah. They actually activate the homing beacon that sends the aliens to the planet. And tells the Borg queen, I mean the alien queen, that she needs to come and finish the job on this planet because apparently we stopped them the first time. So
to be fair there, just with that little, you know, the Borg queen is the alien queen, but the different alien queen, the real alien queen. So
it is
something.
Well, the hive queen,
has happened before and all of this will happen again.
Exactly, just like Battlestar Galactica. But, I mean, I think that as you're kind of watching the movie, it becomes like that classic with the story, especially. It becomes a classic sequel, which is we make it bigger, louder, and just ends up dumber. You know? And because, I mean, even the ship that comes fits over the entire Atlantic Ocean and lands on both sides of the East Coast here and then in, like, you know, Britain and France and Spain. It's covering that kind of land. So we just made it bigger. We didn't make it better or smarter or anything like that. It's just bigger.
Yep.
And I think that was the frustration here is, like you were talking about, Mike, you've got all these great ideas that you kind of put into the movie, but they become side notes so fast that we just get to this like, well, we legitimately have destroyed all of Britain. We've destroyed all of the East Coast in Florida and more than like half the planet this time. It's just bigger, louder, and dumber.
And the other thing about that is while there is a lot of like world building and a lot of these new concepts are very interesting, I think one of the things which we kind of learn in watching this one is that none of that stuff is what made the original interesting. What made the original interesting was really sort of like the characters and the sort of tactile nature of this reality and the grounded nature of this reality. And while I'm stimulated on an intellectual level by the setup of Independence Day Resurrection or whatever this movie's called.
Mike, it's Independence Day Resurgence.
Okay. I will be sure not to forget that in 30 seconds. And, you know, I mean, while that's there, okay, it's like I'm not engaged in it at all, you know? And I know this is going to sound like a knock, and it's not, but it really, I mean, when I was watching it, I kept on thinking, like, this really reminds me of the difference between the original trilogy and the prequels, where it's like one is sort of about characters, one is sort of about this sort of, like, emotional bond with these people, and it feels like a real world, and the other one is sort of like a textbook approach to this alternate reality or this fantasy world, which is really interesting, but you're not like emotionally connected to it at all. And I mean, like, if we want to sort of like extend this into the special effects, which we, you know, gushed over in the first one, here, even though they were technically better, I did not buy them for a second because the whole time I'm like, a camera doesn't move like that. You know, that's just a bunch of, you know, animated people walking around, you know, and I just didn't buy any of it like I did with those, you know, dated effects that we saw in the first one. And I did see, you know, I did go to that double feature you were talking about. And for the first one, oh my God, I was engaged in those, you know, action sequences. I'm like, this is amazing. It was like being in, you know, like a virtual reality thing. And then with this one, I'm just like, I'm watching a bunch of stuff in space. This is so, I mean, ultimately boring, you know? It's strange. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm rambling.
No, that's okay. I will sidestep the prequel discussion.
It wasn't a knock, okay?
And allow Mike, allow John Mills
I
to
love
school
those
you
prequels,
later on Twitter.
Okay? I do. I love the prequels. I appreciate them for those reasons. It's just for different reasons. And it wasn't, I didn't mean to say that, like, this is like the prequels, this one sucks, just like the prequels. No, I meant, like, on a sort of, like, aesthetic level and presentation level. It wasn't meant as, like, a quality comparison.
No, I know, I'm just teasing you, of course. But, you know, I mean, even... So part of the story is that they're having a huge celebration. It's 20 years. Earth has been safe. You know, all of the planet has come together. They are not a one world government, but the Earth is united. They all work together, the different countries. And so they're celebrating. And lo and behold, of course, a ship comes through a wormhole over the moon base. And it looks like a soccer ball, like a smooth, shiny soccer ball.
One groove.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's related to Eve from, Wall-E. I just expected it to, you know, like, Wall-E, you know?
It's
like,
got a little plant sign.
exactly. The little plant sign comes on like, oh, this planet's okay. And, of course, we shoot it down because we think it's an enemy, and it turns out we're wrong. And it turns out that this is a really helpful race that was almost wiped out, but it goes around the galaxy teaching other races how to fight off these invaders.
The Resistance.
Yeah, exactly. And then action, action, action. All the original characters die pretty much except for Jeff Goldblum and Brett Spiner's character.
And Judd Hirsch. Judd Hirsch lives. Surprisingly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, John Hirsch doesn't die, which that was ridiculous. And then we get asked to lead the resistance because humans are awesome.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Like, can we talk about that part in the story too? David's dad? Like, Jeff Goldblum's dad, David. David mm-hmm. is his character name. His dad just legitimately surfs a tidal wave onto Florida, somehow lives on his boat, and gets picked up by some kids. I mean, like, this storyline is just so cliched, awful.
It was the seatbelt, man. It was the seatbelt. Because he was
awful.
Strapped in there.
he had a seatbelt on his boat, but somehow he's still alive. And then gets picked up by some kids who they all end up at Area 51. Somehow. Because that makes sense, because Florida and Area 51 are real close.
It was a big wave.
Yeah. I was just thinking the same thing. I was like, man, he surfed pretty long.
He surfed over Florida, through Texas,
past
into
Colorado
Arizona.
And right into Nevada. Oh, funny enough, it's the Salt Flats. There you go.
Oh, gosh. It just, you know, on the show, I do like to be constructively critical. And I think, though, what we're talking about is that we're frustrated that the movie isn't smarter. Now, I think a lot of people might be saying to us, but guys, Independence Day, the original, is not all that smart. But it's smart in the sense that it knows exactly what it is and it's not trying to be anything else. And it does a pretty good job of making sense for the most part, as we talked about last week. But like you said, Mike, where it really shines is it gave you characters to care about in the situations that they're in. So it wasn't about whether it was the smartest movie. You just wanted to see those characters live. Whereas here, I think the characters and the cast that we get.
Yeah. And, you know, and one of the other things I was just thinking about, too, is like ID4 was also present day. Everything was present day. I mean, it was more realistic and more real than, you know, versus, you know, we don't have these ships that that we have 20 years later. Obviously, we don't have something like that even to this day. But I mean, once the movie was over, I was actually thinking about how video games are the same way. It's like Call of Duty. Call of Duty is bringing out Infinite War. And it's like, okay, enough's enough. Can we stop with the futuristic weapon sort of thing? It's getting too unrealistic. And it's just, I mean, that's how I compared it. I mean, versus the first one versus this one. Cause I mean, it's just, it, I don't know.
And I mean,
I liked it.
And that's like sort of like the interesting thing. I mean, that's what I find to be really interesting about this, you know, movie as kind of like an experiment, because, you know, if you told me like, okay, well, let's make a grounded, you know, Independence Day, which is like the first one, or let's make an alternate reality where we have alien guns, I'd be like, alien guns, of course, that's the way more interesting idea. And I think that, you know, conceptually it is the way more interesting idea, but I think in terms of execution, what this movie proves is that it doesn't work as well, you know? And I mean, maybe this is something that would work better as like a book or something, you know, maybe they should take a cue from the Star Wars expanded universe and try to tell this story in a different medium, because I would love to read, you know, sort of like the, you know, Independence Day fake Wikipedia where it talks about how the world has changed in the past 20 years. But when you see a movie, which is, you know, demonstrating that, you have to set up so much stuff that you don't have time to sort of like deal with all of the things that we loved in that first one. And it feels like the next one, which I think is a perfectly fine concept, is going to take that even further. And if it ever gets made. And that's, you know, is what it is, I guess.
Well, I wanted to ask you guys, so with the cast that we did get in the film, and obviously, you know, you got Jeff Goldblum back, Bill Pullman back, you know, you brought Judd Hirsch back, Brent Spiner obviously plays a much bigger role, Vivica A. Fox is in the movie somewhat, and so and then all the new cast, so was there anyone that stood out to you at all? You know, what did you like? Who did you like? And where do you feel like you could have gotten more, or they could have just done better?
You know, honestly, seeing Jesse T. Usher was the son of Captain Hiller, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was actually, you know, when they were talking about the drama between him and Liam Hemsworth, honestly, I thought it was going to be so much bigger. Maybe they like each other or something like that. But even, you know, once we found out what was the whole drama piece about between the two, I mean, it really didn't make me want to care about it. And it's just, and even in the end, it's like, he's like, okay, whatever. You know, it's like, okay, you can't be any more emotional about that. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, when Brent Spiner came on, it really, Brent Spiner was my favorite out of the whole entire, really, the movie, considering he didn't have a lot in the movie. But I mean, and I think part of it is because he's, obviously he has a history with ID4 and also with Star Trek, and he's funny. I mean, and it's just the rest of them were like, yeah, we'll just make the story go along just a little bit, you know, here we go, you know, not as much as Brent Spiner, but yeah, just make the movie go further.
Yeah, I definitely think that Brent Spiner was the standout here. You know, I was very skeptical because there's, you know, it's been like a thing like, how is he alive? He died in the first one. And they keep on saying, did he? And I'm like expecting some sort of, you know, huge explanation. And they're just like, no, he was just in a coma. And it's like, okay, you killed him. His eyes were open and, you know, Jane went down and he checked for his pulse and didn't find it and walked away. He is clearly dead in the first one, but I'm glad that they didn't kill him because he actually was definitely the most entertaining part of this movie, Spiner is a really good actor. I don't understand why he isn't, like, you know, a character actor in everything. You know what I mean? Like someone like William H. Macy or something like that. So it's great to see him sort of get to do his thing. But yeah, that was the standout for me. Everyone else was pretty much expendable.
Well, and what's so interesting, because, you know, we don't have Will Smith. We don't have that really charismatic person. And I'm sorry, but Liam Hemsworth is just not charismatic enough to pull off the Will Smith role. You know, that's, you know, if you wanted somebody to kind of fill that mold, you needed somebody who had that kind of charisma, but was just of the younger generation. And Liam Hemsworth just isn't that guy. You know, he's, unfortunately, I just don't find him all that interesting. And they also didn't give him anything to work with. I mean, his character is so blasé and so cliched that, you know, this kind of like a military bad boy, you know, that the president's daughter is in love with it didn't really work. And part of that too is that, you know, his relationship and the frustration he had with Dylan Hiller, you know,
it was Dylan.
Stepson.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that just, it didn't really work all that well for me either. And, you know, then of course Hiller loses his mother, and that relationship, like the way she's lost and everything, they just don't do a good job of building any of these climactic moments so that every time somebody dies, you're like, oh, well, I guess they're not going to be in the sequel, you know, just killing all the people off who didn't want to sign up for the sequel. That's pretty much what they were doing here.
There's another rather prominent character which dies in this movie. And it's one of those things where, like, they die, and it's like you see them like, oh, we're going to face off. And then they cut away to something, and then they're like, blah, blah, blah died. And I'm like, wait, what? And it was like something where it was like so, like, poorly done that I thought, like, oh, that person's coming back. They're not really dead. They just think that they're dead. And then they didn't. Like, they were just flat out dead. And it's like, really? Like, that's what you're going to do with that character? And I was really looking forward to this character because of the person who was playing them and stuff, and it ended up being a complete waste and like one of the dumbest characters in the movie. I don't know if you guys know who I'm talking about. I'm trying not to spoil anything.
We've spoiled everything in this movie.
Yeah,
so
I think so.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. The president, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, when they said, like, Cela Ward's playing the president, I'm like, oh, yeah. Because she was, like, you know, someone who was often used as, like, the foil for the people who were playing the president back in 96, you know? I mean, she was, you know, Dr. Richard Kimball's wife and stuff like that. And she was, you know, such a badass in the 90s, and we just haven't seen her recently. And now they're like, she's the president. I'm like, I totally buy that. I would vote for her in a heartbeat, you know? And then she steps up and she just does one stupid thing after another, and then she disappears without really doing anything like of substance, anything. She wasn't a character. She was just like a mouthpiece, you know? And it's like, and then the way that she dies, like, you don't even see it. And it's like, well, wait, what's going on in this movie? Like, I don't know what's going on in this movie because they're doing such a poor job with the execution. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess this is when Roland Emmerich shouldn't come out and call the DC and the Marvel films, you know, dumb and,
well, I mean,
things
I,
like that. I'm sorry.
To be fair to him, movie, he did qualify that and said, like, look, it's not my thing, you know, whatever. If people want to,
well,
like,
but I mean,
it,
if this is your thing, then I don't know, because apparently America doesn't agree that this is its thing anymore, because the box office for this movie is dismal.
Lots of people like stupid things. You know, Paul Thomas Anderson says he loves Adam Sandler movies, you know? So, whatever.
Oh, come on. Adam Sandler movies are awesome.
If they're directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, yes, but otherwise.
Well, and we talked about it last week, you know, but the fact that they don't have Mae Whitman to play the daughter, who has a gravitas all on her own, I think would have been fantastic because she's a great actress. And I think there's nothing wrong with the actress that they chose. But then on top of that, they just didn't give her a lot to do. You know, she's just kind of reacting to all of these men and barely has any agency all on her own. And, you know, the only agency she takes is at the very, very end of the film when she disobeys her daddy to you know, help him out, you know. And so there's just not a lot for any of these characters to do. And I guess what we're just saying is, constructively, the characters were what made the first movie work, and that's what you needed to kind of focus on in this movie. And especially if you're going to, you know, if you're going to kill off Thomas Whitmore, the president, the original Independence Day president, it needs to be really epic. This isn't really epic.
I think they thought it was epic, you know?
I know they thought it was epic. It just wasn't. And that's what worries me. They thought this was epic. That's the problem. Yeah.
I think they're trying to capture, I mean, they're like, that's how the first one ended with, you know, Randy Quaid and stuff like that. And I think they're trying to capture that, you know, sort of feeling, and it just didn't quite work. But yeah, I don't know. It's unfortunate.
My generation up.
Isn't that the thing though, too, is like you said, they had all these great ideas for, to kind of take the movie in a different direction. But this really just becomes a remake of the original film. You know, when like you said, Mike, you've got 20 years, you've got a lot you can do. You can really go somewhere, go someplace different. They started off somewhere different, but end up at the exact same story beat place that they did in the original film. And I think that's kind of what we were all afraid of, that would happen. And I knew I was, and I just didn't think that remaking Independence Day was probably a good idea. And I think, unfortunately,
but everything's getting rebooted.
Proven. But and this isn't even a reboot. Yeah. I mean, it what's funny though, let's talk about it. It's a soft reboot,
mm-hmm,
in the sense that they're killing off all the main characters that they don't want around anymore so they can continue to make sequels with all the kids. About them going off and fighting this resistance in space. So it'll be like, you know, Star Trek 09. So
it's interesting. I mean, if we want to sort of like go off on a tangent a little bit and expand on this idea that we're talking about here of remaking or, you know, doing a sequel to a movie 20 years after it comes out. I've been thinking about this a lot in recent years. Like, what movies that exist today are we going to see sequels for in 20 years? And it was just today when I was thinking about it in relation to this that I think maybe the most likely thing is going to be Harry Potter, you know?
Oh, God.
I could totally see that.
No, I can. I could totally see them remaking Harry Potter.
Well, not remaking, but saying, like, we're going to get, you know, all of the kids back, and now they're, like, 30, and...
Well, that, I mean, they would have to write...
But
she would.
But
have
I mean,
write,
she's already. I mean, how many plays? How many extra books? How many movies? I mean, that's the one.
Yeah.
I don't know. That to me seems like the most likely candidate at this point in time. Anyway, just
for me, what I see happening there is that they are just going to remake the books, but in a way that maybe tries to mirror some of the story elements that got left out of the other movies. I don't know if they do like a big like season-long miniseries for that or something. Just I feel like that's where you take that. But anyway, no, I completely agree with you. I've thought about that a lot because there actually is a lot you could improve on with those films. I love the Harry Potter movies, but I also have a lot of issues with some of them. And so, yeah, I actually wouldn't mind seeing them being redone in some way. So that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. So I got to ask you guys, you know, to sequel or not to sequel, are you guys interested in a sequel? Like, where they're taking this of humanity's special, we're going to lead the resistance now.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I mean, I thought it was going to be just done. But then when Brent Spiner comes up, oh, they want us to lead to the resistance. Like, oh, no. I wasn't so excited about it. I mean, I was entertained throughout the whole entire movie, but it's like it just, you know, it needed to be done. Just finish it, cut it off, done. Don't worry about it anymore, you know. Let's just be done with it.
I mean, I guess maybe I was at a disadvantage in that I had already heard what, like, when they announced this one, or even before they announced this one, they were like, we want to do two. You know, I mean, that was always the intention, you know, so I was aware of that back before I even knew what this one was going to be about. So I was kind of expecting it. But I mean, I think what they're doing is interesting in that they are trying to take it to a different place. Literally. And, you know, I think that that, you know, is the thing to do if you're going to do another sequel, or for any franchise, really. But when I heard, you know, that's when the thing ends and it's like, oh, and you just kind of, you know, think like, well, I guess we know what the next one's going to be. I mean, of course I'm going to see it. Of course I will see it. But am I going to be excited about it? Not really, because, you know, when I hear that, I just think like, oh, man, that seems like a lot of work. As a viewer, you know, that just seems like a lot of work. So, you know, I mean, do I think it's going to be good? I mean, I will always give Emmerich the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I've watched all of his movies, both good and bad. Except I feel really bad. I haven't seen Stonewall and I haven't seen Anonymous, but all of the other ones I've seen. And, you know, I will always give him the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, I don't have high hopes. Let's put it that way.
That reminds me of a great Harry Potter line from the third film where Ron is reading Harry's tea leaves and he's like, you've got kind of a wonky cross and so you're going to suffer, but at least you'll be happy about it.
Yep.
So yeah. Mike's going to suffer watching the movie, and unfortunately he's not going to be happy.
We'll see. You never know. You know, you never know what's going to be good and what's going to be bad.
It's true. You really don't. I want to ask you guys, we talked a little bit about the effects, but I wanted to know, you know, what you guys thought, because obviously, you know, it's 20 years later. We've got so much more. What did you guys end up thinking? I mean, we've got way more destruction this time, you know, way more things blowing up. Did any of that stuff work for you just visually? Did you like it? Did that keep you at least visually entertained, or does that kind of stuff at this point just kind of turn your brain off?
When I saw it, definitely, it was, I don't think it was more destruction. I mean, well, I guess a tidal wave, but I mean, I don't know. It's water. I don't know. It just reminds me of Battleship, but, but like, it's just, yeah, I guess the visual effects worked for me for, like, you know, the air battle and, you know, the ship actually landing on the Earth and how massive it was. And it was, I mean, obviously you had to have something bigger than the mothership that, you know, that's basically a debris field right outside the moon. And, you know, but it's just, I mean, when it's called the Harvester, when the Harvester landed, it was massive. I loved it. It kept me engaged, the air battle, but yeah, the rest of it wasn't too exciting. I mean, I would have loved to seen more, hand to hand, and more of them shooting the alien rifles and whatnot. But I mean, we barely saw that. I mean, it was only what, the last 15 minutes of the movie or something like that, when they were trying to grab, I guess, the soccer ball.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that a lot of the design work and everything was really interesting, like, especially at the beginning and seeing, like, you know, all the new, like, helicopters and ships and those massive TVs that they had outside of the White House or wherever they were at the beginning of the movie. I'm like,
that's the way to watch the Super Bowl,
yeah,
right there.
I'm like, wow, those aliens really had LED technology down, you know? I can't wait to see that. They must be watching something in, you know, 8K or 16K, you know? But as far as it, like, being engaging at all, like, in terms of the action sequences and stuff, like, I just completely checked out. Like, I couldn't even tell you what happened in most of this movie. And I've seen it twice, okay? And it's like, the reason is because it literally is just stuff flying around, you know? And it's like, this stuff is going to fly around and then someone's going to die or something's going to blow up. And then we know that we're at the end. And it's like, it's nothing. It's literally like watching nothing just on screen. It was really expensive. Nothing.
I did like when the ship landed, like Richard did. I thought that was a really cool effect. And again, it was really interesting. But then as it began, it has its own gravity and it begins to suck up everything and then everything falls. It became such a muddled mess of just, you know, this cacophony of craziness happening on the screen that it's too much, you know, because the human eye can only take in so much. And then the problem as well is I had a huge issue with the very last points of the movie where what I loved about the original is when they walk out on that salt flat to go pick up David and Steve Hiller, they are in the desert. There's a crashed ship over there. They're on a real truck. Everything's real. When they have the same moment at the end of this film, everybody is on a green screen, and it looks so bad and so fake that it's just like, this is supposed to be the big moment where everybody reunites, and like, you're supposed to be like, reunited, and it feels so good. And all you can think of is like, this looks like an awful commercial where they put somebody in front of a, you know, a green screen, and then they put something in the background that you can just tell that person's not there.
Is this mirror universe, Matt, we're talking to right here?
Awful.
I'm just saying, like, if you substitute Independence Day for Star Wars, it's like, what?
No. That is a whole other conversation, okay. Because that has an aesthetic that makes it work.
Okay.
Here, there isn't that aesthetic because I can legitimately tell that they're just not in the, they're not in the desert, you know?
Okay. That's cool. I'm just glad that we have that, so, you know, down on wax.
Well, let me put it this way. There is a reality. There is a reality to where they're supposed to be in Independence Day, right? Because we've already been there before in the first movie.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Star Wars, the droid factory scene in episode 2, classic example. That's made up. It's not supposed to be anything that's realistic. So the way it looks, I can my brain can kind of like compensate. But this, it doesn't compensate because I know what it should look like. It should look like the end of the original, where they're all in the actual desert, but they're too lazy to actually shoot there. So they're trying to save money and it just doesn't, anyway, it didn't work.
You're so weird. I'm just putting that out there.
We all have our things, you know, we all have our things, and yeah, call me inconsistent, but, I don't think it's being inconsistent. I'm just saying the work there was really shoddy.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It was bad CGI.
Yeah, I agree.
Cause you can make somebody look like they are in a place and do it well. I feel like they just needed, you know, some more comp time or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, okay. All of this conversation, it'll be interesting to see where you guys, what you guys rate this movie. I don't know. Where do you think you'd put it, Richard?
I definitely ranked ID4 6 out of 5. That's my whole thing. But oh my god, I love the film. It was. Wait. Let me retract that. I like the film. And 3 out of 5. I'm trying to be nice, sir, but I can't. I so wanted to love this film. I really. I mean, granted, we came out of the film. My daughter loved it. She's also 6. So, but you know, she loved it because of the visual effects. And you know, everyone that and I hate to say it like this, but everyone that was younger loved it. Everyone that was older didn't. And I found that to be true on Facebook as well, because everyone I've talked to about it is been like, oh, it's cheesy, you know, the older people, that is. And then I talked to like people that are younger than me, and I'm 33, people that are younger than me, my brother's age. They're like, oh, I loved it. It was awesome. It was this. It was that. I love Liam Hemsworth. And, you know, the romance with Liam Hemsworth and whatever her name is.
Fake Patricia Whitmore.
I couldn't believe the love story at all. It was like, oh, it sounds like they're going to break up sometime soon. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, I'm in the middle. I like it, but I don't love it. I definitely wouldn't see it 20 times like I did ID4. That's for sure.
Yeah, you know, I like I said, I've seen it twice. You know, the first time because I'm like, I have the chance to watch it on the same screen that I saw the original, and I'm like, all right. But in the back of my head, I knew, like, I'm going to see this thing tomorrow because I'm going to the double feature, right? So I think the first time, and it'll be, it's interesting. If you look at my Letterboxd diary, you'll see that the first time I watched it, I gave it 3 stars. And the second time I watched it, I gave it 2 stars. And I think the first time I watched it, for one thing, I was really engaged by all of the world building stuff. And I thought that that was really cool. And sort of as it progressed, I was losing interest. I was losing consciousness, literally. And, you know, it got to the end and I'm like, eh, it's fine. But then watching it again, you know, in rapid succession, I was like, this does not work. This really does not work. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff in there, but the execution is rather terrible. And because of that, I gave it 2 stars. And I think that's accurate.
It's funny because doing this podcast, I really do, for the most part, try to see a movie that's brand new a couple of times before I do the podcast. And that's because I want to be knowledgeable about it. You know, I want to know my stuff. I want to know the plot. I want to know the intricacies of things. I want to make sure that I'm not missing anything, you know, and I want to do service to the film for the listeners. You know, I don't want to come off as a novice. Even if it just came out, I want people to be able to respect that, you know, my opinion is well-formed because I've spent some time and some money. And, you know, I can have a good opinion of the film, one that people can trust and say, well, I mean, you know, Matt's seen it, you know, he said 3 times, you know, already. So, and this is his opinion. So this movie I only saw once. One, because I didn't need to see it again. Honestly, because I'd already seen the original, and it was better. And two, I just didn't want to see it again. Like, I don't want to pay money to see this again. I will probably never see this again. And that's unfortunate. I hate saying about this movie, but there's really not a reason to do that. It's not even one of those films where, like, oh, you know, see it once on the big screen and that's enough. Like, maybe if this is on HBO one night and you're flipping channels and you're bored, stop by, give it a look-see. But this, to me, I rated this 2.5 stars on Letterboxd, Mike, but I'm going to have to go back and change that because this is a 2-star film. You're right. And I hate saying that because to me, 2 stars is awful. You know, 1 is like nigh unwatchable. But this is a 2-star film, and it is an unfortunate thing to have to say that because what it could have been is it could have been at least a 3-star film if they had invested in the story and in the characters in the ways that we talked about, you know, really brought out those interesting elements of the story that they had kind of set up, but then they glossed over and given us some characters to actually care about, you know. They just don't do that. And in fact, they kind of make you not really care about the characters that used to be. And I mean, you know, the ones you cared about from the original film. They kind of bungle it.
I mean, to answer your question earlier about, like, does a sequel harm the original or whatever, like, I totally think that that's a no. Because, I mean, how many times have you thought about Jaws 2? You know, I mean, seriously, I haven't even seen Jaws 2.
Well, I've never seen
exactly,
Jaws 2.
Exactly. So. You know, so, I mean, that's the thing. And it's like, I will watch the original Independence Day 3 billion times from now until the day I die. And I may never watch this one again, but I will also basically never think that this one will never even enter my mind. So it can't, you know, affect that for me. And also, don't feel bad about only seeing this movie once. I mean, you know, I think there's really something to, like, the Pauline Kael philosophy of, like, regular people are only going to see the movie once, right? So to give your opinion based on that one time you saw it, I think is completely valid because you shouldn't have to watch a movie, like, twice in order to like it, you know? Sometimes that happens, but, you know, it's okay to only see a movie once.
No, I totally agree with you. And for me, again, it's not to, like, make myself like a movie. It's just to be familiar with it so that I can talk about it intelligently.
That's fair.
I want to make sure the listeners are, you know, they want to listen to the show, you know? Yeah. So I appreciate all of you guys, just everyone listening. It means so much that you do take your time out to listen to the 602 Club. Thank you so much. And hit us up with a star rating and a review on iTunes. We're doing the review contest. You can win yourself a digital copy of the new Batman v Superman Ultimate Edition. It's totally worth watching. I've seen it already. And I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Even if you didn't like the movie originally in its theatrical cut, I think this movie will make you rethink it. I really, truly do. Because a lot of the criticism that I heard of it, well, I think this movie does a good job of adding back in those story points that people were missing. So check that out. Really thankful that we get to do this each week with our associate producers, making sure that happens through Patreon. Ken Tripp, Davis Grayson, thank you so much, guys. You mean the world to us for helping the Trek FM network go round. Now, we're a listener-supported network, and we definitely need your help to keep all of this content coming to you. So just go to patreon.com/trekfm, and you can see how you can be part of the team today. And just make sure that all the content that we put out each and every week through Trek FM keeps coming to you. Now, Richard, before we get out of here and let everybody not probably go watch Independence Resurgence over this holiday weekend, where can we find you?
You can find me popping in and out of the Bayo Conference on Facebook.
Awesome, man. Yeah, and as Mike let everybody know, you know when you see Richard there, thank him for making sure that Trek FM shows come out on time. So, really do that.
I got that last week's episode to you a few hours earlier than normal, didn't
early,
I?
Early, very early. I was like, whoa.
Mike is keeping his promise.
Yeah, let's see if it happens again this week.
Well, Mike, before we get gone, where can everybody find you?
You can find me right here on Trek FM doing Stage 9 with John Mills, where we talk about the people who make Star Trek. This week, we talk about the new audiobook version of Harlan Ellison's original screenplay for City on the Edge of Forever, and it's like a full cast, you know, it's almost like a table read of the screenplay, and it's also got all the essays and everything. It's really interesting, so head on over there and check it out. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
Well, everybody can find me on Twitter as well at MattRushing02. You can also find me on the network here with Chris Jones doing The Orb, talking about Deep Space Nine. Of course, also doing Literary Treks with Dan and Bruce, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We also interview the authors. It's a blast. Great place to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. So many great books coming out this year, so be sure you check that out. I do a podcast with John Mills as well. It's called Aggressive Negotiations. You can find us on iTunes under Aggressive Negotiations or over at thenerdparty.com. We hope that you will join us. It's so much fun talking to Star Wars with John. And of course, you can find the 602 Club special feed. We have the Star Wars feed and has all the shows we do there. So check that one out as well. If you like the 602 Club and you just want to listen to all the Star Wars shows we've done, check that out. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And y'all come back now, you hear? Unless you're an alien.